KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Daly City, otherwise known as Little Manila.
Lower Hay.
Outer Richmond.
Fremont.
South of Market.
The Marina.
The E.
Petro Hill. The Dirty 94107.
I'm from Israel, living in Santa Clara.
Coming up, San Francisco is giving low-income people a discount if their cars are towed.
If we can find something that works better for people, it can actually work better for the city as well.
Then we'll hear about TEPCO, an East Bay ceramics company that's become cultishly collectible.
Way down low in a cabinet where you could hardly see were two doggy diner mugs. We were quivering. We were so excited.
The cult of TEPCO. We've got that and more coming up today on Cross Currents. Ferguson, Missouri, 2014. Thousands take to the streets to protest the police shooting of Michael Brown. But they're also protesting an overall pattern of police discrimination. Listen to George Fields, who is waiting in line for Brown's funeral.
When you get pulled over for menial things, you have to go through too much to get out, and you lose your jobs and whatnot, you know, for a $50 ticket and pull over.
The Department of Justice found that police in Ferguson disproportionately targeted black residents with traffic tickets and other fees. Similar patterns soon came to light across the nation. Here in San Francisco, the city treasurer called the city a predatory government. In 2016, he announced a new office to reform city fines and fees, and he named Ferguson as an inspiration. This Sunday, some of those reforms are taking effect. But do they go far enough? We check in with our reporter, Eli Wirtschafter. Eli, how did Ferguson change things in San Francisco?
I think it really focused attention on just how high some of these fines and fees are in San Francisco and how hard that is on poor people and people of color especially. The Chronicle did an investigation in 2016 and found that towing charges in San Francisco were twice or three times as high as in other major cities in the U.S. Elisa Della Piana, who's a civil rights lawyer in San Francisco, told me that after Ferguson, activists got more interested in reforming fees.
We've been more and more aware since Ferguson that municipal fines and fees are getting higher and higher, are imposed in many instances unfairly or discriminatorily, and we have our cities placing an unfair debt burden on low-income people.
So in 2016, the San Francisco treasurer created something called the Financial Justice Project. It's basically a division of his office to look at fines and fees in the city and figure out which ones are having a discriminatory impact on poor people and people of color.
Now, the Financial Justice Project, that sounds like a noble cause, clearly. So what's it done so far?
Well, the thing is they can't actually change policy. All they can really do is make recommendations to other agencies and to lawmakers. So, one example, the city allows you to enroll in a payment plan if you get a traffic ticket and pay it off over time. Mm-hmm. The city also has an option of allowing you to pay off tickets by doing community service. But in the past, you had to pay at least $60 to sign up for those plans. The Financial Justice Project said that low-income people should be able to sign up for free. So in March, the SFMTA, the Municipal Transportation Agency, kind of compromised and lowered the enrollment fees. Now you can sign up for the low-income payment plan for just $5. Although actually, the Financial Justice Project can't take all the credit for that one because at the same time, that lower rate was now required by a new state law. Mm-hmm. Low-income, by the way, is defined as a household making less than two times the federal poverty rate.
Okay, so this Sunday is July 1st. That's the start of the fiscal year. And understand there'll be some other fees going down.
Right.
What are those?
So these are fees that relate to towing and booting. So if you're low income now and your car is towed, you no longer have to pay for the first 3 days of storage fees. So that could save you up to $200. Mm. Another new rule if you're low income, you don't have to pay the $177 towing fee to the city. But that's actually just one of many different towing charges that you're going to get if your car has been towed. There's still all the fees you owe to the private company that tows cars in San Francisco. And then you're still on the hook for whatever citation got you towed in the first place, which could be hundreds of more dollars.
Right. But the city is giving a bit of a break there.
Yeah. It's almost a $180 discount on towing for low-income people.
And you mentioned that boot fees are being lowered too?
Right. So again, this is starting July 1st. Now low-income people can get a discount on the fees for boot removal if you have unpaid citation, the city puts a boot on your car so you can't move it. That boot removal used to cost $500 for everybody. The new low-income rate is $100, so that's a lot less.
Well, every time you do something, there's going to be some sort of consequence. Is the city expecting to lose revenue because of these changes?
Yeah, they are, actually. For the boot removal, they're expecting that the reduced rate will cost the city $80,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And because of the reduced tow rate, they're now planning to raise towing fees for everyone else who doesn't fall into the low-income category. The tow fee will go up by $15 in 2 years for everyone else.
Interesting. So the people with low incomes get a discount, and everybody else pays a little bit more to offset that.
In this case, yes. That's the argument that the SFMTA is making. But then there's, at the same time, and there's an argument to be made that all these reforms, the reduced rates and the payment plans for low-income people, could actually counterintuitively increase the city's revenue.
How's that?
Well, so a lot of times, people who can't afford to pay for parking tickets simply never do. They just don't pay the citations and they don't pay the towing fees. And then Auto Return, this private company, gets to sell their car and Auto Return keeps the money. Hmm. So now the idea is if the city can make it easier for people to actually pay their tickets, then the city could get more income.
That could happen. It's an optimistic theory.
Well, it's not just a theory. Ann Stuhldreher, who's the director of the Financial Justice Project, says it's already happening.
The number of people who are opting to do payment plans to pay off citations has quadrupled. If we can find something that works better for people, it can actually work better for the city as well.
But there are still some hurdles for people who want to take advantage of all these new reforms. And one of them is proving you're a low-income earner so that you can enroll in these plans. There's only one place you can do that. It's the SFMTA Customer Service Center on Van Ness and Market.
Now serving 0016 at window number.
I went there to check the place out. It's this little office that's only open during weekday business hours. And I went up to the guy at the counter, his name was Faisal Sheikh, and asked how you can get on a reduced rate plan.
They have to do it in person.
You can't do it online. You have to show up with documentation that shows you're eligible for some other public benefit like Medi-Cal or food stamps that have similar income requirements. And here's another thing. If you had unpaid citations and your car was towed for that reason,
community service is not offered once a car is booted or towed.
So these reforms make a difference, but there still can be a lot of obstacles to getting on a payment plan or a community service plan.
Yeah, they're just getting started with some of these things. So at this point, is the city done making these reforms, or can we expect to see more in the future?
Well, there are a lot of recommendations that the Financial Justice Project has made that have not yet been adopted. So for instance, they wanted to eliminate all towing fees for people who live in their cars. So we'll see if fees in general are an issue that the incoming mayor, London Breed, wants to take on. In the past, she's been critical of how high towing fees are in San Francisco. In 2016, she was one of the people who was pushing for some of the reduced rates we have now. She said to the Chronicle that it amounted to robbery, the current system. So this could be something she makes a priority as mayor.
Well, we'll find that out pretty soon. London Breed's coming into office on July 11th. Well, thanks very much for the report, Eli.
You're welcome.
Eli Wertschafter is KALW's transportation reporter. You could email him at transportation@kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hana Baba. From the 1930s to the 1960s, the Technical Porcelain and Chinaware Company, or TEPCO, produced dishes for restaurants all over the Bay Area. While the El Cerrito-based factory closed back in 1968, its durable dishware lives on as an iconic East Bay collectible with an unexpected and impassioned cult following. Ariel Plotnick has the story.
Have you ever fallen in love with an object? My mom once fell in love with billiard balls. You know, the balls you use for playing pool.
We don't really go to flea markets that much anymore. I mean, I can talk to you about something that I bought that I had to have. So we were there once, and I always loved pool balls. just playing pool, like the solid ones and the striped ones. And we came across a box of celluloid pool balls, not new ones. And they were, celluloid is a kind of plastic that kind of glows. And I just loved them. I thought they were so beautiful. I just feel like I fell in love with something because of the shape and the color and the way it glowed. And it was mine for a little while. And then,
the graphic design on the outside of the box was very beautiful.
Yeah, but it was what was inside.
Growing up, I learned to appreciate objects for their history and their beauty, not just their function, which is why I was really excited when I met Sandy. I'm sitting outside at a cafe talking with Sandy, and she's telling me about the moment she found what she'd been looking for years.
Well, we went to visit Lynn's relatives in Chattanooga. And we always go antiquing wherever we go. And we went to this antique store, and way down low in a cabinet where you could hardly see were two doggy diner mugs. So we bought them, and we were so excited. And we got back to the cousin's house, and they said, oh, yeah, how'd you do? And we were quivering. We were so excited. And we said, oh, we found the most wonderful thing. And they, oh, yeah, yeah. So we unwrapped them, and we showed them, and they all said, oh, that's nice.
I know what you're thinking. You're probably thinking mugs, so what? But these aren't just any mugs. They're mugs made by this company called TEPCO. TEPCO stands for the Technical Porcelain and Chinaware Company. This company made dishes from 1930 to 1968. The factory was on the border of two towns in San Francisco's East Bay, El Cerrito and Richmond. At one time, these dishes were everywhere. You could find them at the local donut shop or country club. Even the U.S. Army and Navy used TEPCO dishes on their ships and in their mess halls. Now, I need you to imagine these dishes with me. Imagine you're in a diner. The waitress comes over and drops off a plate of pancakes and a mug of coffee. The plate is really heavy. It's ceramic and dense, maybe beige or light blue, a little glossy. The mug is thick. You could drop it and it wouldn't break. This is what the typical TEPCO dish looks and feels like. They're pretty ordinary, but today these dishes are really meaningful to a lot of people. This is a story about the passionate community of TEPCO collectors in San Francisco's East Bay. It's a story about why they love plates and the comforting permanency of objects in an impermanent world. I saw my first piece of TEPCO at a flea market in the East Bay.
Oh, there's usually TEPCO here.
Wow, it's gorgeous. And I fell in love. I love the thickness, the glossy sheen. They're beautiful in their total ordinariness. Sandy and Lynn think they're really beautiful, too.
Am I the main dish? My name is Sandy Ginzer-Mack, and when we created the TEPCO Collectors Club, I was the main dish.
I'm Lynn Mack. Sandy is my wife, and as part of the TEPCO Club, I was the side dish.
Sandy and Lynn, the main dish and the side dish. They're in their 60s, and they are TEPCO royalty. For years, Sandy and Lynn organized the TEPCO fan club. Every 2 months, the club would get together to show off their own personal TEPCO collections. They even sent out a newsletter called the TEPCO Tribune to their 60 club members. Dues to join the TEPCO club were $5 a year. Sandy and Lynn have thousands of pieces of TEPCO.
We were born collecting, each of us, and we came together and we each brought that gene, whatever it is. It's a real problem because it means you have lots of stuff. I don't know, people say, what are you going to do with it? I'm going to have it. What do you mean, what am I going to do with it?
They have so much TEPCO that they had to buy an outdoor shed to store all of the dishes in. Their house was just getting too full. Full with boxes and bags of TEPCO covering the floor. I only know this because they described it to me. They wouldn't let me in their house.
Oh, it's not that we don't like people to come over to our house. There's just no place to put them. There are boxes, there are bags, there are stacks. And so in order to get into a room, we'd have to move stuff out.
Which is why we're talking outside of a cafe. Part of the appeal was that TEPCO was so easy to collect.
We could find it anywhere. You could find it at rummage sales on the corner for nothing. And then they started getting popular. And we started seeing less and less.
I think we caused it.
Like you two.
Well, we and our friends, our club. People said, oh, there's a club. There are collectors. There's a newsletter. Oh, it must be valuable.
On the table in front of us is a binder so full, the three metal rings are breaking. It's full of images from original TEPCO catalogs, with pictures of every plate ever made in every design. Other than the classic solid colors, TEPCO dishes often come in wild patterns, with equally wild names.
Hawaiian, Madeira, Oregonian rose, Oriental poppy.
Illustrations of bamboo, leaves, wagon wheels, flowers, and pagodas decorate the plates. And they're beautiful in a kind of ugly way.
I don't know, it's got dings and scratches and knots and the quality is very bad and we love it.
The more time I spent with Sandy and Lynn, the more I realized that their TEPCO collection is an ode to their past. They grew up in the working class town where TEPCO was made. And these dishes weren't fancy. They were made for everyday use. To hold a TEPCO plate now is to hold an artifact of the old, blue-collar, small-town East Bay that's changing. A few weeks after our first meeting, I emailed Sandy, the main dish, to ask if she wanted to go to an antiques fair with me. We could search for TEPCO together. She'd always been quick to get back to me, especially when talking about TEPCO. But I kept checking my email and nothing. Finally, I got an email newsletter from the mayor. Sandy, a board member of almost every committee in town, died from unexpected heart complications. I was shocked. Just weeks earlier, she had been so alive, laughing and talking a little too loud into my microphone. Her memorial was a few weeks later at a country club, and everyone came out. It was a celebration. Some of her friends wanted to dress like her, so they wore matching sparkly sequin tops. Everyone was talking about Sandy's TEPCO collection, like Steve, her coworker.
So I never got to see her famous TEPCO collection. In fact, I told her a joke that I was going to pack myself into a box and have it delivered on her stuff, and she would have to open it, and I'd have to see her TEPCO collection.
And Gina, her niece.
I was around when she started this crazy collection. And I was actually drugged around the country in search of this TEPCO. Literally, they would drag me through antique shows and they would get so excited to pick up these hideous, heavy plates. And I didn't get it. I still don't get it. But I know that was a passion of hers. We're going to go to TEPCO Beach. You know, we're celebrating Sandy's life today, and that was a big part of it.
I went to TEPCO Beach a few weeks after the memorial. It's a stretch of shoreline in the East Bay where the TEPCO factory used to dump their broken plates. Walking on TEPCO Beach means crunching on thousands of shattered TEPCO plates, bowls, and saucers, main dishes and side dishes. TEPCO shards are piled in a thick layer on top of the sand, mixed with dried seaweed and beach brush. Most of the shards are white, but if you crouch down, you can find special treasures, patterned pieces, and handles broken off from teacups. TEPCO dishes were handmade, and sometimes, if you're lucky, you can see a fingerprint preserved in the glaze, a fingerprint of a factory worker. There's only one TEPCO factory worker still alive. His name is Frank Storno, and he lives at a veteran's home. I left a few messages for Frank telling him I'd love to talk about TEPCO sometime. I wanted to talk to him about why people still love TEPCO dishes so much here in the Bay Area. But people all over the world love dishware too. What is it about dishware that's so endearing, so special? David Rago is a ceramics expert. He tours around the country with Antiques Roadshow, the antiques appraisal TV show. He's been selling ceramics since he was 16. His career began when he saw one very special tea set.
I still see it in my head, and it was, wow. It was the mystery that I needed to understand the depths of. Why is it designed that way? Well, there's a reason for it. If we look at these things and really understand them, we understand that universal energies coalesced in one place at one time and crystallized into this rooster plate you brought.
Yeah, I went to David's auction house in New Jersey and brought my favorite TEPCO plate.
I'm just curious, like, why people seem to respond so passionately to this style, this, like, dinerware, 50s, I don't know.
Okay, so you brought it. You answer that. I mean, that's that really. Out of all the things you could have brought for this interview, you brought this plate. How come?
I think it seems so naive to me, this plate. Like, it's so of a time that I think this would never be made now. And the quality of it, like, I hold it and it feels like this was made with some sort of intention.
I think you're describing your past connection with it for one thing, but also naive is an interesting word to use for the 50s, for the 1950s. I mean, we just emerged from the biggest war in world history. How do you remain naive after that? And I think that you're right in a way, in that I think to some extent we went back to a simpler time just to withdraw from the horror of World War II. And so if you look at some of the things that were made in the 50s, there is a naivete to them.
These dishes romanticized a thriving post-World War II America. In fact, dishware became emblematic of America's booming manufacturing industry. Before the World Wars, Americans got a lot of their dishes from Europe. Afterwards, though, no one wanted to import anything. So the U.S. started producing their own dishware. There were a lot of companies around the country like TEPCO. They weren't making fine china, but everyday kitchen cabinet plates can also become heirlooms and tell our history. Again, Lynn.
And these things that we collect and that we try to preserve represent just everyday life. And I think that's very important.
A few weeks later, I finally heard back from Frank Storno, the last living TEPCO factory worker. He said he was happy to talk and invited me up to the veterans' home. I packed my recorder, my notebook, and was ready to go. But the night before the interview, I got a call. Even though that morning he was lucid and telling lots of stories, Frank Storno had died. He was 101 years old. With Frank and Sandy gone, Lynn's TEPCO collection really is kind of this last memorial to the factory, to the dishes people like Frank had handmade. 3 months after Sandy's death, Lynn's considered what the legacy of his collection might be.
What are we going to do with all this stuff? We have no idea. I have no idea. But I'm not there yet. I know that these things are important to me. They're probably not going to be important to somebody else.
But they're important to me. I've started collecting TEPCO now, too.
So here's my meager collection.
I have 5 plates, 1 saucer, and 1 teacup. I've had lots of opportunities to buy TEPCO plates in the past few months. They're pretty easy to find at flea markets in California. But I think it's more fun to see TEPCO dishes in use in the wild. Most restaurants don't use them anymore. But every so often, I'll sit down to eat, usually at a diner, and think I see a TEPCO plate. I now flip dishes over to see if they have a TEPCO stamp on the back. They rarely do. But I'll keep flipping dishes over probably for the rest of my life. Because one day it might be a TEPCO plate. And that'll be really nice.
Now,
That story was produced and reported by Ariel Plotnick. It was made while Ariel was a graduate student at the UC Berkeley School of Journalism. The story was edited by Anna Sussman with help from Samantha Clark and Lisa Morehouse. And that's our show. Our team includes Raquel Maria Dillon, Janae Darden, Zoe Ferrigno, Angela Johnston, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Emma McAvoy, Truk Nguyen, Marissa Shea, Andrew Stelzer, Josh Wilson, and Lisa Morehouse. Our engineers are James Rowlands, Gabe Graben, and Jackie Sajiko. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. You can hear the best of Cross Currents anytime by subscribing to the Cross Currents podcast. Do it at kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. That's also where you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter. It's a good one. You're listening to Manos Lindas, a trio from San Francisco. They're playing at Hotel Utah tomorrow night. The show starts at 8 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.